Africa gets in your blood. It doesn't matter which part of the continent you visit, north, south, east or west. This place has a way of hooking you forever, of making sure you will always return. There's just such a thrill to countries like South Africa and Botswana, Tanzania and Kenya, Morocco and Tunisia. There's a sense of adventure, of excitement. You never know what a day in Africa will hold, whether it will be good or bad, inspiring or shocking, exciting or devastating. The only thing that's certain is that you will have some of the best travel experiences of your life in Africa. You will camp under stars, you will rove open plains, you will trek through jungles, you will wander around cities, you will cruise rivers and lakes and oceans. You will see the cradle of humanity, the place we all came from, and realise it's a destination that you will inevitably return to. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today, we're singing the praises of the Dark Continent, Africa. To me, this is one of the finest, if not the finest, destinations on the planet. And yet so few Australians seem to make it over there. So few people really understand what it has to offer. But we're going to change that. Helping me to do so are two long-term visitors to this amazing place. First up, he's a columnist for traveller.com.au, known as the Tripologist, a man whose love of Africa has drawn him back countless times, Michael Gubicki.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Mike. Great to have you on board.
Thanks.
Also with us, she's an award-winning travel writer whose African credentials will be apparent from the moment you hear her speak, Catherine Marshall.
How's it, Ben?
How's it, Catherine? Great to have you here.
Thank you.
Now, do you guys heard what I just said about Africa? Do you feel the same way? Does it get in your blood, do you think?
There's something really special about Africa. And look, I find myself kind of lost for words a bit to try and define what it is. I don't know. I mean, I guess, as you said, it's the fact that we've started from there.
Yeah.
There's some almost kind of elemental connection, I think, that you feel with Africa. There's a kind of a magnetism to it. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, Catherine? I think a homecoming, I would say.
Yep.
Of course, it runs through my blood. I'm from there, so I feel a very intense connection with Africa. But I think you're right, Michael. There's something very primal about Africa, about the fact that it is the cradle of humankind.
Yeah.
It's full of fossils that attest to this. And I think that people connect with it on some, as you say, elemental level when they first visit.
I've always felt very at home there. And I'm as pasty an Anglo guy as they come. And for me, it feels comfortable to be there.
Exactly. There's a strange sense of calm I get from being in Africa, especially the southern part of Africa. That I don't really get from too many other places. It's just the sense of, I don't know, being my soul is sort of being settled there, you know? Which is strange because I certainly don't feel like I belong there.
Yep. That's a good point.
I'm a stranger, but all the same, there's something that draws you there.
Yeah. I sent out a few questions to you guys beforehand to ask you about your feelings about Africa, and it was interesting to me that you both mentioned the smell there. What is that about? What's about the smell there, Catherine?
Well, the minute you climb off the plane, you smell it. There's something about that scent that you don't find anywhere else. And I would suggest perhaps it's the bush, but then, you know, you land in Johannesburg, which is nowhere near the bush.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure what it is, but there is something about the smell that I think manifests in that initial contact with Africa.
Yep.
And you find it again and again in many different countries.
Yeah.
It's not just confined to one place.
Yeah.
I must say there's something about the rain. When it rains in Africa, and the minute the raindrops hit the earth, they release this intense smell of dirt.
Yeah.
And it's a truly beautiful smell.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, that makes sense. There's a smell that I get when I'm in the bush that I always associate with Africa. And I've been a few times and I could never quite identify it. People had different ideas. It's elephant pee or something like that. But it's actually there's a bush that grows quite a lot, quite prolifically throughout southern Africa. And it's that. It's very strong. It's a kind of a musty, I don't know what it's called. It's a kind of a musty smell.
Yeah.
Very distinctive. Once you've smelled it, it's one of those things that just brings back the experience of being there for you.
Mm. And if I might also just say one other thing about the smell of Africa. Mm. There's something about the thatched roof, which instantly shouts Africa.
Right.
And I've smelt that smell elsewhere mm-hmm. outside of Africa, and it transports me straight right. back there. Okay. So it's very commonly used, but once more, it's a plant.
Yeah.
It's right. harvested there, yeah. and it really yeah, encompasses okay. The continent, I feel.
For me, it's African sunsets that really gets me when I'm there and that I miss when I'm not. And I don't know if that's a completely romanticized thing because I see them when I'm sitting in a campsite drinking a gin and tonic. But there's something about African sunsets, you know, with the silhouettes of an acacia tree. And often if you're in a national park, a lot of dust has been kicked up by animals. And so you get to watch the sun, you know, all the way. You can focus on it the whole way going down to the horizon. It's an incredible thing.
That's true. Yeah. I agree with you. And I think... although I know that Africa, of course, is a continent and not a country, and it's full of, you know, of valleys and mountains and so on, a lot of it is flat. So unlike Sydney, which is quite hilly, quite ridged, a place like Johannesburg or the High Veld or certainly national parks in East Africa tend to be quite flat. Yeah. And so you have these beautiful vistas across savannah from which to actually observe the sunsets.
Yeah, absolutely. And that reminds me that I wanted to sort of acknowledge something here, and that is even the premise of this podcast is a little bit ridiculous, because to think of Africa as one sort of place, one conglomerate that you can go and do and say, I've done Africa because you've been to X country, it's a bit ridiculous, isn't it? This is such a huge continent with so much to do there and so much diversity.
Yeah, so much between north and south and east and west.
Yeah.
Sure, it's... I mean,
it actually kind of bugs me when people say, I'm going to Africa. Like, okay, yeah. Where?
Many different languages, different cultures, yeah. different food, different, completely different ways of life. They're probably completely alien to one another, you know, between north and south. It's very different.
Yes, two completely different places and almost different continents, really, if you look at the people and the cultures.
Yeah.
We often speak of sub-Saharan Africa as a way of differentiating Southern Africa from Western and Northern Africa, but in fact, Sub-Saharan Africa also encompasses countries like Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, Gabon, probably the Central African Republic, Cameroon, places like those, which in fact are very different from East and Southern Africa.
I mean, even to compare, say, Uganda with Namibia or something like that, or Botswana, they're completely different places.
And something that's also, I think, contributed to their characteristics would certainly be the colonization that occurred in Africa in the 1800s. And so you would have a country like South Africa, which was colonized first by the Dutch and then the British. Its neighbor Namibia was colonized by Germans, and today it still retains a very German flavor. Angola and Mozambique were colonized by the Portuguese, and then as you go up into Central and West Africa, you have French colonization. So that also contributes, I think, to the melange that Africa is.
Yeah, absolutely. I did a trip through Southern Africa maybe a couple of years ago now, actually. My partner and I drove a car around South Africa and Namibia and Botswana. Probably the best trip I've ever done. But one thing that really struck me was there just weren't many Australians that I met on that trip. And Australians consider themselves fairly intrepid. You know, we're out there, we'll do anything, we'll go anywhere. But in those campsites and driving on those roads, I just didn't meet any other Aussies at all. And I feel like there is something that holds people back from going over there and having these adventures. And I'm not sure what it is. There's a fear of Africa for some reason.
It's true. I think there is a big blind spot. There's a perception of we associate Africa with fear, with danger, with menace, with trauma. And that's largely a result of what we see in the media. You know, the media focuses on all these negative things that happen. Well, it's fairly easy to find that sort of stuff. But, you know, you go to Africa and everybody's happy. And for the most part, anyway, what I see, people are happy or smiling. They have nice families, nice kids. The kids go to school. They're well-dressed, all this kind of stuff. It's absolutely normal.
Does that frustrate you, Catherine?
Yes, it does. I think there's a huge misconception about Africa. Of course, what we're going to see in the media is the catastrophe rather than the everyday life. I think with Australians travelling to Africa, perhaps the people who do go are on package tours because perhaps they feel that's a safer way of doing it, or staying at more high-end properties. Mm-hmm. But yes, I think for the most part, well, as with any country, one has to take precautions, be vigilant. Of course, you're not going to march straight into a war zone.
I think, again, it's this idea that, that Africa is one place kind of feeds into that as well, because I was in Kenya and people were saying they were so frustrated because the Ebola crisis was happening in Sierra Leone and so no one was coming to Kenya. And they were saying Sierra Leone is closer to London than it is to Nairobi.
Absolutely. And in fact, the Ebola crisis was even felt as far afield as Southern Africa, which is almost an entire continent away from Sierra Leone. So I think there's a lot of ignorance around there, or out there, I should say. And it's our job really to try and educate people about the realities.
Sure. Which hopefully this episode is going to do.
Yes, indeed.
Have you guys ever felt unsafe there at all?
I never have, but look, most of my experience of Africa has been, of Southern Africa has been in the bush, in the wilderness. So
nothing,
I think
nothing
it's,
hurt you out there.
No, well, no, nothing. Perfectly okay. As long as you don't stray more than 10 meters outside your tent, absolutely fine. I think it's, well, Catherine obviously knows this much more than I do. I think it's much more of an urban problem.
Yes, and of course,
skewed with statistics skewed by very small pockets of certain countries, isn't
it? Yes, that's right. And of course, I'm an immigrant to Australia because it's a safer country to live in. However, we're talking about tourists in Africa rather than residents of Africa. And of course, as Michael says, you're not necessarily staying in a gated community in Joburg or Nairobi when you go on holiday, and you would be taking the necessary precautions. So there have been times that I've felt unsafe, but I must say that the most fear I've ever felt in my home country of South Africa was when I was charged by an elephant. And so, you know, we laugh about being safe in the bush. In fact, I think that's another huge misconception among people not familiar with the with the continent, that that the wild animals are indeed wild and they're actually incredibly dangerous.
I was going to say, the only times I've ever felt unsafe in any African country has been because of wildlife. It hasn't been because of people. I've found people overwhelmingly friendly and extremely kind. But I've had a few. I was camping in this place in Zimbabwe, an amazing place in Hwange National Park, and there's a lot of elephants around there, and they were walking through camp a lot, and I was told, before you leave your tent, you know, unzip and have a look around you before you get out. And there was one morning where I got myself ready and I unzipped my tent and peeked out, and basically my entire vision was filled with an elephant's eye because its head was right in front of the tent flap, and it just scared the hell out of me. And it just made me realize, no, these things are out there, and if you're not wary of them, you can get in trouble. Things happen. Hippos in particular.
Yeah, absolutely.
Continue to kill a lot of people over there.
Yeah, they do. I think hippos are actually the biggest killer of people in Africa, apart from mosquitoes through malaria.
And a weed munching vegetarian is more likely to do you in than a lion.
I always knew to be vegetarians. Always been suspicious of them.
Angry vegetarians.
That's right. Nothing scarier.
But they weigh 4 tons, and that makes a difference.
They do. And another very scary incident that I experienced was just upstream of Victoria Falls. When we were on a sunset cruise, and a foreign tourist did not heed the guide's warning that there was a pod of hippo, and we were trying to move through a channel, and he stood up to take a picture of these creatures, and of course they lunged at our boat. Oof. And I got some great photographs which were later published, and of course a great angle for my story. But we might well have died or been severely injured. Yeah. So
hippos genuinely scare me. I've been out on a little tinny on Lake Kariba, also in Zimbabwe, doing some fishing. They have tiger fish up there, which are quite small fish, but really fight. So anglers love them. And we're in this little tinny, and we started floating towards a pod of hippos. And we started thinking, okay, it's time to get out of here. Let's start the engine and go. And we jumped up and tried to start the engine, and the engine wouldn't start. And we're drifting closer and closer to these hippos. And there's a genuine, you know, those things, if you get too close, they'll just go for you.
Absolutely.
And we ended up pulling the lids off the eskies and rowing away while the hippos looked at us with their little beady eyes above the water, like, what are these idiots doing?
Oh, wouldn't you love to have had a camera for that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was petrified at the time, but maybe we weren't actually in that much danger. Who knows? But just the unpredictability of them and the knowledge that all you have to do is float a little bit too close. And
yeah, and they'll upturn your boat.
They will.
Yeah. I've been in a Mokoro in Botswana with local guys, and we got close to a hippo at one stage, which they hadn't seen, and they were really scared. I was okay. I thought, well, you guys know what you're doing, and you know, I'm in your hands. And but yeah, they were seriously quite scared of what could happen.
I guess, look, there's so much more to Africa than the safari experience, which everybody kind of hears about. But let's talk about safaris for a while, because I mean, Mike, it is one of the amazing experiences of your life, isn't it?
Oh, sure, it is. It's just fascinating. It's really so interesting. If you go with a good guide who really knows their stuff, I mean, they read the bush like an open book.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic to see. I mean, they watch what the birds are doing or what the animals are doing around you, and they can actually interpret, oh, there's, you know, what's going on a couple of kilometers away. Mm. It's just fantastic. And what you realize is that there's a kind of an intelligence, you know, a pattern of working about nature, which I think is just intriguing.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
As you say, they
read it like a book. They know if X animal moves in this way, it probably means that there's some other animal over there doing something.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's just so great to watch and to have that kind of interpreted for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just fantastic. I mean, people do self-drive trips through Botswana, places like that. But I think, you know, you'd miss a lot if you don't have someone who can tell you what's going on.
Yep. Mm. Yep. Catherine, where are your favourite places to go on safari?
Well, obviously, I'm partial to the Kruger Park.
Yep.
I think it's an incredible place. There you would be doing mostly self-drive safaris, although you can do group tours as well. And I agree with you, Michael. I think especially for people who are doing that once-in-a-lifetime trip, it really is best to go with an operator, with a guide. You know, they'll also find the animal tracks or animal scat or little bends in the branches or, you know.
And they can tell how long ago it was by how much dirt has moved over the top of the paw print.
That's right. And sometimes you can even, as happened to me earlier this year in the Republic of Congo, you can still smell the silverback that has just moved through this section.
I was going to talk about that, actually, of other, because, you know, when we think about wildlife experiences, we think big five, lions and elephants and rhinos, and those, that's incredible. But there's other stuff like gorillas in Rwanda and Uganda.
That's right. And I think these are starting to gain some profile in Australia. Mm-hmm. Mostly when we think of safari, of course, we do think of that quintessential safari experience, which for me is, although I love Kruger Park so much, for me, probably the most quintessential safari experience is in East Africa.
Right, okay.
In Masai Mara and the Serengeti.
Yeah.
The Serengeti is in Tanzania, Masai Mara is in Kenya.
Yeah.
The two are really one contiguous park, so you move freely through them.
Yeah.
And for anyone planning that trip of a lifetime, that is where I would recommend they go.
Right.
But yes, beyond that, I've been lucky enough to experience gorilla treks in both Rwanda, where mountain gorillas are protected, and in the Republic of Congo, in Central West Africa, where Western lowland gorillas live, and they are critically endangered.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So that's another wildlife experience that's really
and
worth
there's
doing.
Underwater stuff as well. I've done a lot of scuba diving in South Africa. They have a lot of what they call raggy tooth sharks, but we call grey nurse sharks. And there's some dives around the Durban area where you can just see huge big schools of these raggy tooth sharks.
Wow, that's amazing. Another one, I haven't done that myself, but during the sardine run, the famous sardine run, which is a migration of millions of sardines up the coast towards
Mozambique. Which I originally thought was a fun run when I first heard that.
It's a good name for a fun run.
I thought it was an economy class seating plan.
That's a good one. I think I might use that, Michael. I don't think one would go diving at that time because although the sharks have their eye on a much easier prize, but that's something that you can also witness. And then, of course, there is cage diving with great whites off the Cape, which I personally wouldn't do, and I'm kind of ethically opposed to that, but I think I'd be too terrified anyway.
Seeing Africa is something special. There's very little between you and the world, and on safari that world is pretty wild. Luckily, when you're with Intrepid Travel, you've got expert local guides and a small group of fellow adventurers to share in the experience. Across the plains of the Serengeti and the Masai Mara, through mountains, remote villages and idyllic beaches, Intrepid Travel has a style to suit everyone, with over 150 Africa itineraries to choose from. Check them out at intrepidtravel.com/Africa. Well, guys, we've talked a lot about sort of South and East Africa and that kind of classic experience that people think about, but what about North Africa? Mike, I know this is a place that's close to your heart. What's different about it up there?
Oh, completely different. I think it's it's obviously the climate, but and the facts of geography as well. You've got a huge desert to contend with, and that comes pretty close to the Mediterranean coast in parts.
Yeah.
But the defining factor for me is the fact that it's an Islamic culture.
Right. So we're talking countries like Morocco, Tunisia,
exactly.
Egypt.
All of North Africa, Africa kind of north of the Sahara is pretty much influenced by that. I mean, in Morocco, you've also got a very strong Berber element that's kind of traditionally not Islamic, and that creates a real difference in that country.
Yeah, right.
That's mainly the dividing line is the Atlas Mountains. Yep. North is mostly Arab, and the south is pretty much Berber.
Yep, okay. Mm. One of my favorite cities in the world is Fez. In Morocco, which is just unlike anywhere else I've ever been before. And I really hate that travel writer's cliche of stepping back in time. Mm. But the Medina there's almost no other way to describe it, is there?
I mean, you can't get in there with a vehicle.
Yeah.
For one thing, you've got to get it.
There's donkeys with cars.
It's donkeys. So, it's donkeys and it's pedestrians. So it does feel like a medieval city.
And you get lost in there within seconds. I don't know how anyone goes in there and manages to find their way out.
Yeah, it's great. It's wonderful. It's really wonderful.
And you know, you go to you look for a butcher and there's an actual camel's head hanging on a hook above them to show you that
It's fresh.
That it's fresh and they're selling camel meat there. Yeah. And there's nowhere else like that, I don't think.
No, it's maybe Kathmandu, but it's a fascinating place, that Medina there. And I think it's the biggest you might know this, the world's biggest Medina.
Right.
All UNESCO, you know, heritage, all that. Yep.
And there's Roman history in North Africa as well, which people, that's not a thing that you normally associate with Africa, but places like in Tunisia, you've got these amazing Roman mosaics that are a lot of put in the main museum in Tunis, but you can sort of see them all around the country. Mm. Libya as well, which is not really a place that people are going to be going at the moment, but there's Leptis Magna, which is one of the best preserved Roman ruins in the world.
Yep, and in just outside of Fez and Meknes, of course, you've got Volubilis. Mm-hmm. Which was pretty much the most southerly Roman occupation site in Africa.
Yep.
So they would have been bringing animals for the Colosseum. They would have been bringing slaves up through that way.
Yep.
Very interesting place. You know, it's, as you say, great mosaics. And then it was abandoned because it was a little too, the mosaics were a little too racy.
Right.
For the, when the Arabs started to come in, the mosaics were completely a no-no.
Yeah.
What was going on there?
You did see some with the faces scratched out because in Islamic culture you're not allowed to have human forms. And so they've just sort of taken out the faces and left the rest of them
and
there.
A few other bodily parts in the case of Volubilis as well.
Yeah.
But Fascinating history.
Yeah. And of course, in Egypt, you've got all the Egyptian ruins there.
Yeah. And that's just a knockout. That's something that everybody should see. That trip along the Nile is just, you know, if you haven't done it, you've really missed something very special in travel.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. How do you guys travel around in Africa in general? I mean, I know this, it's probably a different thing for every country, but that's probably one of the things that people aren't so sure about. Do you hire a car? Do you go? I mean, there's overland tours, which are pretty popular as a budget way of getting around, which is basically joining a truck tour where you get taken around with a guide and a driver, and they take you to campsites, and you know, it's an easy way to see. But you know, someone like Paul Theroux, I've read his book Dark Star Safari, and he is so scathing of people who do those trips, the overland trips, because it's not real Africa. You're not really getting yourself out there.
Yes, of course, but not everyone is Paul Theroux. And not everyone has the time to travel overland alone.
While writing an erotic novel.
Absolutely. Not everyone has the metal either.
Yeah.
It depends on where you go. So, for example, in southern Africa, you could very easily hire a car, as you did, and drive around, camp at different sites, experience the countryside that way.
Yeah.
I think it's quite fairly easy to get from one country to another when you're traveling from between sort of South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, even Zambia, and so on into Mozambique.
Yeah, as long as you have the paperwork done, which any hire car company, particularly the ones based in Botswana and South Africa, if you tell them the countries you're planning to go to, they'll give you the paperwork to get you in between those countries. Mm. It's very easy.
For a country like Kenya and Tanzania, you could also probably hire a car, but I would probably go with an operator.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to see, and I'm not that familiar with those countries, so that's a really great way of doing it.
And then there's the other way of getting around, which is the high-end way, which I've met some people doing this, where you just fly everywhere in a light plane.
Yeah.
And to me, I met some people, I got to stay through work in this very high-end place in Botswana for a couple of nights, and I met these Americans, and they were flying from safari camp to safari camp, basically, in these light planes. They have airstrips at the safari camps. Mm. And so they landed, got off the plane in Mound from flying from the US, jumped in a little light plane, and then off they go. I mean, that's a pretty baller way to get around, isn't it?
Yes.
I don't really like it. I mean, they would say to me, oh, you know, people in Botswana are so nice. Like, who have you met? You've met staff.
The waiter here is so great.
That's right. Yeah. You met staff at high-end resorts. That's
the
all.
The pilot, who's not from Botswana anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Look, I think it is a wonderful experience. I've actually done that. I'm guilty as charged. I've done that in Botswana myself. I'm flown into Maun from Cape Town and then flown off to one of the camps run by Great Plains Conservation, done safari there, and then flown to another one of their camps. And it introduces you to another way of life and to people who live in a very rarefied world.
Yeah, they
do. But I also love nothing more than a road trip, and it can be through the bush, undergoing, as the Africans say, an African massage.
Right, along those corrugated roads.
Absolutely, hours and hours along a corrugated road. And that's when you see the country in its finest detail.
Yeah,
I think.
To me, and that's the ultimate.
You meet people, as you were saying, and you get to interact with the country folk.
Yeah, and that was one of the best holidays I've been on, and a big part of that was the people that I met, and this kind of surprise almost that everyone was so friendly, that you'd pull up in a campsite and start to set up and someone would come over and introduce themselves and ask about where you've been and where you're going next and offer a few tips, and it was and even just the drive days, like being out there and just feeling like it's an adventure and a challenge, and you know, you're taking on these roads that you've never seen before, and you're looking out for animals by the side of the road to see if they're going to be there, and there's just something really sort of intoxicating about it, really.
And I think on that kind of journey that you've just described, the people that you're meeting are on holidays. They're undertaking a similar journey.
Yeah.
Those sorts of people, at times like that, people are always in a good mood.
Yeah.
You're looking to interact with others. You're all on a similar quest, I suppose. Whereas if you're flying in and out of camps, mixing with, you know, high society. It's a very different experience.
It is, yeah. Guys, we could go on talking about Africa for hours and hours. It's such a huge place, but we're going to have to wrap up, unfortunately. But I thought we'd finish off with what is your one sort of, or the one experience, the one destination that you would tell people that they absolutely have to do on their first ever experience over there?
Wow, that's such a big question.
It is. Ridiculous, but let's go with it anyway.
Look, for me, the best experience I've had in Africa was in Botswana, mm-hmm. and it was a canoe safari that I did along a kind of quite a narrow channel called the Silinda Spillway that only flows occasionally. The river has to be the Okavango River, which basically is what Botswana is really all about.
Yep.
That only occasionally sort of fills up sufficiently to create water down there. But that canoe safari, canoeing through, there was nobody around. Nobody lives out there.
Yeah.
It's just you in the bush. You don't see all that many animals.
Right.
But when you see them, it's fascinating. Yeah. There's nobody else around.
Yeah.
There's hippos you have to watch out for.
Much more thrilling than sitting in a safari vehicle with eight other people.
Yeah, and you're in control of your emotion a bit. That was just a fantastic trip.
How about you, Catherine?
Well, I would reiterate for first-time visitors a safari in East Africa. But for those who've perhaps done that already, one of my most memorable experiences was the Kasanka bat migration, which is the world's largest mammal migration. Often people think that the great migration between actually the Masai Mara and Serengeti with the wildebeest is the largest. But in fact, this is an occurrence where millions and millions of bats gather from all over equatorial Africa in this tiny little swamp forest, and they spend a few months there just gorging on fruit.
Yeah, right.
And there are very few people there. It's in Zambia. Mm-hmm. It's in a remote corner of Zambia near the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah.
And you're actually able to climb up waterberry trees or African mahoganies and be in amongst this cacophony of bats that are either arising for the night or returning home the morning.
Amazing. And then for me, I've mentioned the self-drive thing around Southern Africa, which I would highly recommend. But somewhere that we haven't even touched on at the moment is Ethiopia, which is really opening up as a tourist destination now. And there's in the town of Lalibela, there's these rock-hewn churches there, which is a series of, I think it's 12 or 13 full-size churches which have been chiseled out of rock, and they're sort of submerged, and you see the roof of them basically because they're sunk into this rock, and it's just incredible. They're still working churches. You still see monks walking around there in white robes in the mornings, and it's just like nowhere else on earth. It's really incredible. Catherine and Mike, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate having you on board.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks
it's great
for
to be
us,
here.
Ben.
Before heading to Africa, make sure you go to smarttraveler.gov.au to check all of the warnings and advice. If you'd like to read stories on African destinations, you can check them out at traveler.com.au. And to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy.